support for this KQED podcast comes from ACT, presenting Stephen Sondheim's rapturous musical, A Little Night Music. Featuring an all-star cast, A Little Night Music begins performances at ACT's Geary Theater May 20th. ACT-SF.org.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and for the rest of this hour, we'll be discussing new research showing a disturbing rise in suicides among African-American kids. The study examined national data on the deaths of black children between the ages of 5 and 11 between 1993 and 2012, and it found that the suicide rate nearly doubled over that 20-year period. The findings were published Monday in the journal JAMA Pediatrics. Here to talk with us about that, Lisa Horowitz. She's a staff scientist and pediatric psychologist with the National Institute of Mental Health. She joins us from Maryland this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us on the line, Dr. Damon Tweedy. He's assistant professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Duke University School of Medicine. Dr. Tweedy, good to have you with us as well.
Thank you.
Let me begin with you, Lisa Horowitz. You worked on this study. Describe it. How was it conducted? And summarize the findings a little bit further than I did there at the top.
Sure. Well, first, thank you so much for inviting me on the show and talking about this critical public health threat of suicide. The study was actually launched because of a real-world question. There was a local, very young girl who had killed herself, and a reporter approached Dr. Jeff Bridge, who is the lead author of our study, and asked about how common suicide was in young children. And so we investigated, and while we knew it was rare, there are very few studies examining younger children and suicide. So what we did was we looked at the national CDC database that uses death certificates that mention suicide. And what we were most interested in were trends. So we looked at rates over time, and we looked between 1993 and 2012. And what we saw at first was that the rate was pretty stable, about one child per million under the age of 12 killed themselves. But when we stratified the data by race, we found diverging trends for black and white children. And so there was a decrease in the suicide rate for white children and an increase in the suicide rate for black children.
And how surprising was that?
It was very surprising. And it was surprising because historically, black youth have had lower rates of suicide than white youth. And actually, that's true for adults as well.
And I don't know if you got into the why as opposed to crunching the numbers and just looking for the trends, but what are your thoughts? I mean, what in general, what leads someone of that age? We're talking about kids here, 5 to 11 years old. What would lead someone of that age to take their own life?
Sure. So I will just start out by saying the study was not designed to examine the why, or we were just looking at the trend over time. And so we do have a follow-up study that we're doing to look at the precipitating factors that preceded the suicide attempts and the suicides. But the reason why young children might kill themselves are, the data that we have, we really have learned from adolescent suicide. So I'll be extrapolating, just guessing. But there are all kinds of factors. There are presence of a mental illness. There's maybe an unusual preoccupation with death, maybe a family history of mental illness or suicide in the family. And then there's environmental factors like poverty or maybe family dysfunction, experiencing violence, maybe abuse history. Those kinds of things.
And when you looked at those numbers, what did they show for, say, Latinos and Asians, Asian Americans?
So there was no significant difference in the changes between those groups.
Yeah. Okay. And Dr. Tweedy, you weren't a part of this study, but obviously you think about these issues and have written about them. What struck you about this study?
Well, I think it's a fascinating study. It's something that I actually was not personally aware of. I primarily work with adults. I certainly have worked with children in my training. But as the other speaker mentioned, it's historically you think about African Americans, there being a lower suicide rate, both in adults as well as in adolescents. At this really early age, I mean, this is really a striking finding. I think the paper talks about a couple of other possibilities. that I thought were interesting as well. It seems like most of the suicides were in the 10 to 11 age range, and just in talking about the environmental factors, I think those are really probably important ones to consider. It also talked about maybe how in the past, the lower suicide rate is thought to be a result of maybe cultural factors like religious beliefs and things that may protect black people from committing suicide, and that maybe some of those protective factors are eroding in some ways, and that maybe making black people now more vulnerable to suicide.
And Dr. Tweedy, you had an op-ed piece somewhat coincidentally in the New York Times this past weekend about poor health outcomes for African Americans more generally, not just in mental health, but diabetes and stroke and high blood pressure, cancer, prostate cancer, all kinds of things. And you attributed that in part to the shortage of black physicians. Say more about that theory that you have.
Well, I mean, so these disparities, they're called health disparities. These are widely known, and they've been established for decades, you know, even longer than that. And as I talk about in the piece, I mean, there are many factors. There's things like, you know, poverty, less access to medical care, all sorts of things that kind of go into the reasons why we have these health disparities. But yeah, so in my own personal experience, I think there's also this factor that having fewer black doctors is a contributing factor. Certainly, I would say it's the main factor, but certainly a contributing one. Because often you'll see many black patients come to the clinic, and you know, they'll want to see a black doctor. There's not one available. Historically, there's just a lot of what you might say mistrust the healthcare system, and that also often discourages black people from seeking treatment, and then you end up presenting to medical care with at a later stage of illness. So that's a really common scenario we see in all sorts of illnesses.
And in terms of mental health, too, you focused in on that there may be even a different approach to mental health issues. The African Americans may be reluctant to be open with a doctor who is an African American, and that the doctor, a white doctor, for example, might prescribe a different course of treatment based on the race of their patient.
Yes, I mean, so there's certainly many, you know, excellent, you know, white doctors, Asian doctors who provide really good care to black patients. I think in the mental health setting, perhaps even more so than in other medical fields, the issue of trust and communication is even more important. That personal relationship you can establish with the provider can be even more important in that setting. And so, yes, I talk about in the article specific cases that I've had where the patient just was really not forthcoming or reluctant to talk about the issues that were really at the heart of their concerns. And I think in that shared cultural experience that I had with the patient, they were able to really express what was really on their mind and really getting to the heart of the problem.
We're talking about a jump in the rate of suicides among young African Americans. Our guests are Lisa Horowitz, a staff scientist and pediatric psychologist with the NIH. Also with us, Dr. Damon Tweedy, assistant professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Duke University School of Medicine. If you want to join us, give us a call at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions and comments. It's forum at kqed.org or tweet us. It's at kqedforum. Lisa Horowitz, coming back to the numbers, did you find regional differences at all?
Actually, we did not find regional differences.
And so even within a state, you know, rural versus urban, anything like that?
Sure. So, again, these are very small numbers. When you look at youth suicide, when you look at the adolescents, you find regional differences. And when you... there are definitely states that have higher and lower rates. In fact, it's a pretty wide variation. California actually has the fourth lowest rate for youth suicide in the country.
Hmm. What are some of the ones with the highest?
So some of the ones with the highest are Alaska and North Dakota.
And you're talking about generally now, not just African Americans?
I'm talking generally, and I'm talking about adolescents. Because there's so few numbers with the 5 to 11-year-olds, so most of the data we have is for the adolescent suicide.
So how do you screen for these things? What kinds of things should doctors, pediatricians, psychologists be on the lookout for?
So that's a great question, because detection is really an important part of suicide prevention. And so the most important thing is to ask kids directly about suicide. There's a myth that if you ask someone about suicide, it'll put the idea in their head. And recent studies have refuted this, that asking does not hurt. It does not put ideas into the head. And in fact, it's the best way to talk to a child about suicide. So you can ask directly, are you having thoughts about killing yourself?
But even before, you wouldn't just ask that out of the blue. I mean, what would lead one to ask that question?
So what we're hoping is that the medical setting starts screening for suicide universally for children. And so anyone who's at a medical appointment is actually a great opportunity for physicians and nurses to screen for suicide. But if you're a parent and your child is acting different, or you're really they're acting reckless, or their mood seems really low, then it's fine to say, you know, I've been worried about you, and you seem like you're feeling really down. Are you having thoughts about killing yourself? That is really an okay thing to ask, and it's important, actually.
And what about drug use? What does that indicate, if anything?
Sure. Drug use is also a risk factor. So if your child is starting to use drugs, that is one of the big risk factors for suicide.
And Dr. Tweedy, what would you add to that in terms of things to look for and questions to ask?
Well, certainly in a clinical setting, just depression itself is a huge risk factor for suicide. And so asking children if they're feeling down, or if they're feeling depressed, I mean, so often that's a prelude to asking the more direct question about suicide.
Yeah. We've got some questions from listeners, and again, I'll give out the phone number. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or forum at kqed.org. You can email us your thoughts. Will writes, thanks for covering this important topic. I hope your guests will address the role of gender, as the study shows the death rates are from 3 to 9 times higher among boys than girls, depending on the year. Although it might be said that boys use more lethal means than girls, it's also critical to address why that is and to address the role masculinity plays in this form of self-inflicted violence. Lisa Horowitz, first of all, gender differences.
Sure. It's a great question. So females attempt more often than males, and males complete more often than females. And in our study, when we looked at the racial disparity, we also saw that it affected black boys. When we looked at black girls, there was also a there was an increase, but it wasn't statistically significant. So definitely gender plays a role.
And what about that question about masculinity?
So if what the writer meant was that it puts more pressure on people to on boys, that they're supposed to be a certain way or not supposed to cry or have feelings, then absolutely that would add to a stigma about talking about your feelings and a stigma about depression, and so that could contribute as well.
And Dr. Tweedy, what about, she mentioned the word stigma, and I'm wondering, is there more of a stigma? I mean, there's a stigma generally in our culture talking about mental health issues and even getting help sometimes, but is there more of a stigma, or less for that matter, in the African-American community that you're aware of?
I would say that there's probably more of a stigma. As you say, there's a general stigma in society as a whole towards mental health, but there is more of a stigma, I would say. Certainly, many times I've seen patients who've been very reluctant to engage in a mental health treatment at all, and these are adults as well as adults with children who have mental health problems, and sort of feeling as if that's a quote-unquote a white person's illness or problem. So that's certainly a real factor. And you can see how if someone is suffering in that way and not taking treatment, that the illness may be more likely to progress to something like suicide. So that's certainly something that you can see.
What does that mean? It's a white person's problem. I mean, what's the thinking behind that?
Well, I think the thinking may be that the way that if you think back, to think about psychiatry as a field and mental health as a field going back further, I mean, it often is portrayed in a popular setting as something that's for more well-to-do people, treatment, you know, someone sitting on a couch, and it's more for well-to-do treatment. It's a luxury to have those sort of problems, and that, black people can kind of suffer through things and kind of tough things through, and black people have been through so much historically that this is not the kind of thing that we would need. So there's certainly some remnants of that that's still present today.
And is there also a stigma if you seek treatment, more so in the African-American community?
Yes, I would say yes. I mean, these are certainly talking in general terms, for sure. I mean,
sure.
It doesn't apply about everyone, but certainly I would say that you may see black people be more inclined to seek alternative forms of treatment, whether it's through, and not that these are necessarily bad things, but they may be more inclined to approach through a faith-based approach rather than more traditional sort of mental health treatments. So that's certainly something that is common.
All right, let's go to the phones now. Again, the number to call if you want to join us this hour, 866-733-6786. And let's go to Sean in Oakland. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the show. My question is, you know, the study referred to a period of time, I think it was 1993 to 2012.
Right.
During that same period was a rise in crack cocaine, which really destroyed the fabric of African-American families. I wanted to know if the researchers could respond to the relationship between these sort of social issues around crack cocaine and job loss and the mental health issues of African-American young people.
Great observation. Lisa Horowitz?
So there, you know, when Dr. Tweedy talked about the protective factors for black individuals. So there was strong social support and strong religious faith, spirituality, family support. Those were all protective factors that we thought maybe had the rates lower for black people. And so these issues that you're bringing up, I think, are really, really important. And the truth is we don't know yet what the factors are and, you know, why it's different now. We don't really know why the rates are changing, but we are definitely studying them, and I think those are really important. Drug abuse, job loss, all that would contribute to suicide risk.
Dr. Tweedy, any additional thoughts on that?
Well, I've certainly seen cases of people, parents with drug abuse problems, and the children can really suffer. I mean, and much more likely to be abused, and so certainly I think there's probably some correlation there, but teasing it out is something that needs to be done further, as Dr. Horowitz mentioned.
Sean, does that respond to your question, or do you have anything to follow
up
with?
Well, you know, I think if you look at that same period of time, we do see the erosion of black community civic life and
sure.
The erosion of sort of family ties. And these things are, you know, the emergence of crack and drug epidemic, or sort of drug addiction, is also a function of the broader economy, right? And so I think that there's an interesting relationship between looking at suicide and its connection with the broader kind of social issues that are happening. And I think that those trends, I think that the professors are here are correct, that we haven't studied enough the relationships between those. But what it suggests is that if we address the broader social issues, perhaps we can have an impact on the individual sort of mental health issues as well. But these things are connected, and I think that the work that they're doing is really good.
All right. Sean, I'm going to ask you to stay on the line. By the way, our producer wants to get your information. I know you're a professor at SF State, and you work, you study African-American youth, right?
Yes, I do.
All right. So thanks for calling in, and just stay there on the phone if you would. Let me ask you, Lisa Horowitz, so what do you do now with this data?
That's a great question. Well, we're going to examine it further, and but really what I think it is a call to action. I mean, this is a call to action not only with young children, but with youth and with adults, that suicide is a real public health threat in our country. And, you know, the National Institute of Mental Health, along with the National Action Alliance for Suicide Prevention, has a pretty aggressive goal that we're going to reduce suicide by 40% over the next 10 years. So that would be saving 20,000 lives in this country. And so we are hoping to use this data to not only spur on more research and to, you know, try to understand better these precedents that and the factors that cause suicide, but also to just bring attention to the problem of youth suicide.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. Stephanie in San Jose, welcome.
Hi, I'm calling because I'm Native American, and we're told a lot about the Native American youth and adult suicide rates are the highest in the country, I believe, and I'm wondering if that's the same for this age group, the 5 to 11-year-olds.
We had an email about that as well. Lisa Horowitz, Native Americans.
Yes, Native Americans are at greater risk for suicide, and it's a and probably disproportionately so. So that's another risk group. And
why is that?
Well, I think it has to do with isolation, less access to mental health care, poverty. There's a whole host of risk factors. But they're definitely a group that requires, and actually this brings up a good point about culturally sensitive interventions. This is not a one-size-fits-all approach to suicide prevention. Kids, adults, different cultural groups are all going to require different suicide preventions that will be effective within each group.
Dr. Tweedy, I assume you'd second that.
Yes, I agree completely.
And to what extent, I mean, as you, we were talking earlier about the lack of African-American physicians and psychiatrists, of course, you don't have to be African-American necessarily to relate to an African-American patient, for sure, or Latino or Asian, whatever it might be. But this idea of cultural competence, how easily can that be taught? Dr. Tweedy.
Well, I think it's a challenge. I think I think most doctors and programs agree that it's a good thing. I think we do run into significant challenges. So I think it's only one part of the overall picture. I think another important part is really to diversify the workforce as well. So I think it's a combination of both factors, but it's not an easy thing to do.
All right. We are talking about the rise in suicide rates among African-American young people. You're listening to Forum, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer. And let's go back to the phones. And Osha in Sebastopol, welcome.
Thank you very much. I have many things I could address around this, but what I wanted to, the thought I wanted to bring to the fore is that the question about this, how the statistics are gathered. I had a daughter who took her own life in her early adulthood. It was in Seattle, so I'm not sure what the politics or the social parameters are. But on her death certificate, although it was a carefully and well-crafted suicide, it was scored as accidental death. And so, you know, I don't know how that works in at large, but I know that I had that one experience that brings that question to mind as I listen to the comments about the study and the results of the study.
Yeah, Lisa,
and
go ahead, sorry.
The implication in my mind is that the stats are skewed low.
Yeah.
And that we actually have a great deal more suicide in among young people, you know, for a host of reasons.
Yeah. Lisa Horowitz, your thoughts about that? I would assume that's correct.
Sure. And thank you for your courage in speaking up and calling in. Absolutely. These numbers are all underestimates, and we have every reason to believe that the numbers are higher.
What's behind that? Is it sort of a reluctance to, again, come back to stigma, I guess,
yes,
in a way?
I believe so. I think stigma and then, you know, what it might do for the family or for, you know, to put suicide on a death certificate. But there, you would be surprised that even people that show up for suicide attempts, for example, in an emergency department, how little of the time suicide is actually mentioned and discussed, even when someone comes in for a suicide attempt.
Yeah. Dr. Tweedy, yeah.
Yeah, I would say, you know, thanks to the caller for sharing this with us. I would also say that, I guess getting back to more of the study and about how race may play into that, the study itself alludes to the idea that this misclassification, you know, someone committing suicide being classified as an accidental death is often even more common among black people. And again, pointing more to the idea of the stigma being more enhanced. So it may be an even underestimate of the suicide rate among blacks, if that makes sense.
All right. Osha, thanks again for calling in. Appreciate your courage, and good luck to you and your family.
Thank you so much.
All right. Back to the phones now. Dave in Oakland, welcome.
Hi. Thank you. And I really appreciate this discussion. I appreciate the researchers coming in to talk about this wonderful topic, you know, And I just, I'm a practicing psychologist, and I work in the Oakland schools, and I just wanted to speak to the importance of the relationships of the young people and their teachers, and how important it is for the relationship with the teachers, and how the teachers can be such a beneficial asset to being able to assess for problems that the students are having with mental health issues, too.
Yeah, that's a great point. Lisa Horwitz, obviously teachers spend a lot of time with young folks and can be a conduit of information to people who can help, right?
Absolutely. And teachers can also ask directly when they're worried about a child, are you having thoughts about killing yourself? What we tell kids is that you should find a trusted adult to speak with, and that could be a teacher or a coach or their doctor or a nurse, a parent, someone that they feel like they can talk to. So absolutely, teachers are really, really important and critical in suicide prevention.
All right, Dave, thanks very much for the call. Here's an email from Justin who writes, perhaps I missed this earlier in the show, but what did the study find regarding suicide rates of LGBTQ-identified people and youth? Lisa Horwitz?
Yeah, so we didn't look specifically at that. That wasn't data that was available to us. And it might have been data that's hard to find, given that it's the 5 to 11-year-old age range.
All right. And here's another question from a listener wondering if early onset of puberty might be a factor in suicide rates of black children. Dr. Tweedy?
Actually, and Dr. Horwitz could probably speak to that as well. In the paper itself, it does mention that is one possible factor. It's known that black boys and girls enter puberty maybe a year or so earlier. And so with the highest concentration of suicides in the study were at the 10 and 11-year-old age range. And so that would potentially correlate, because puberty is certainly correlated with higher rates of depression and impulsivity and aggression and those sorts of things. So that's certainly one possible theory. And I'll defer to Dr. Horwitz for further thoughts on it.
Sure. I mean, I think you pretty much covered it. We don't know, but A earlier onset of puberty could also mean earlier onset of mood disorder, and so that could play a role.
All right, we're just almost at the end, but real quickly, Lisa Horwitz, what takeaway would you like to parents and teachers and families, communities, clinics to get from this data? Real quick.
Sure. So everyone can have an impact on the suicide rate. We, in the last 50 years, we have not been able to make a dent in the suicide rate in this country. Every single person can have an impact by asking directly about suicide to someone they're worried about.
All right, very good advice. Thanks very much, Lisa Horwitz from the NIH, Dr. Damon Tweedy, assistant professor of psychiatry at Duke University School of Medicine and author of the upcoming book, Black Man in a White Coat, A Doctor's Reflections on Race and Medicine. Thanks to both of you very much for being here.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Susan Britton, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. I'm Scott Schaefer in for Mina Kim. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.